a decrease in the overall index.
One measure that Mr. Raisi's government has taken from the beginning is to increase the country's stock of basic goods very quickly to a reliable level. If this did not happen, when they eliminated the low dollar subsidized exchange rate and people rushed to the stores to buy the essential goods they needed, there would be lasting shortages. This did not happen, and this shows that the right planning was done, and it was done at the right time. As much as people shopped, the shelves were replenished, and this showed good planning by the government.
Meanwhile, a top UN human rights official said at the end of her visit to Iran that the harsh unilateral sanctions imposed by the US have had a damaging impact on human rights in Iran. Alena Duhan, the United Nations Special Rapporteur on the negative impact of unilateral coercive measures on the enjoyment of human rights, denounced the foreign sanctions that have affected the daily lives of ordinary people in Iran. "The sanctions have killed people, and there are several cases in my report," said Duhan. "The most convincing reason is the lack of access to medicine. Yes, Iran produces more than 90% of its medicines, but unfortunately, for doing so, they need to provide raw materials from abroad. This is difficult because we know that it is very difficult for this country to obtain, pay for, and receive these materials due to direct and indirect effects of sanctions. As a professor of international law, I can add that if there are no more sanctions from the United Nations Security Council, the international law will not allow governments to impose unilateral sanctions, especially on financial and banking systems." There is plenty more right after a quick diversion into world media. Iran sets 40% rise in exports. Iranian President Ebrahim Raisi said on Saturday that Iran witnessed a rise of 40% in its exports in the past year and a 13% growth in non-oil exports this year, despite the ongoing U.S. sanctions. Raisi said that the Iranian nation, just as it excelled in the imposed war, will also win and excel in the sanctions war with the participation of economic actors and producers. "Experts and producers are our officers in the sanctions war, and they should strive to win the battle," the president said at a ceremony on National Day of Export, noting that no effort should be spurred towards production and development of basic technologies. Gas exports rise up 19% in 5 months. Iran's gas exports have increased by 19% in the first 5 months of the current Iranian year, compared with the same period of last year, managing director of the National Iranian Gas Company said. During the period, gas exports averaged 70 million cubic meters per day, while last year's figure was 59 million cubic meters per day. Majid Cheghini was also quoted as saying by the oil ministry's news agency, Shana. The official noted that gas exports to Iraq experienced 20% growth, and exports to Turkey also increased this year. Close to 30 million cubic meters of gas per day are sold to Iraq, and Turkey buys around a quarter of its 40 billion cubic meters of piped natural gas a year from Iran. In a speech to a group of businessmen and manufacturers a few months ago, leader of the Islamic Revolution Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei said the data of the past decade, especially those for economic growth, inflation, and foreign direct investments, are unsatisfactory. Accordingly, the administration of President Ebrahim Raisi has set a considerably more ambitious goal. He is targeting a growth rate of 8% for the current year.
The principalist president aims to achieve that goal
through boosting self-sufficiency and trade ties with regional neighbors, as well as China and Russia. But even with that approach, which includes parallel diplomatic efforts in Vienna to lift sanctions, challenges remain.
Mr. Raisi's government, especially regarding the subsidized currency and its removal, and the export bans applied to agricultural products, reconsidered the policies from the beginning of the year. Also in the budget discussions, they considered these points that the export bans at least takes 3 to 6 months to take effect. And during this period, the production sector must be able to adapt itself. Besides, it causes serious problems in the implementation of foreign policy. Another point hindering our trade has to do with the issue of import and export balance, which is very serious. It means that we have to import products in return for what we export. For instance, when we export energy, we must import other goods in return for it. That is, the trade balance should be close to zero, be it primary goods or end products. And in this way, economies become dependent on each other. For example, we constantly export oil to China and import products. And in this way, economies become dependent on each other. For example, we constantly export oil to China and import products in return, goods and machinery included. And this type of bilateral trade balance makes our exports very stable.
To reach President Raisi's envisioned growth, Iran needs major infrastructure investments, according to economists. Raisi's proposed budget for the next Iranian calendar year, beginning in late March 2023, which assumes sanctions remain in place, is forecasting a boost in oil income and a 60% increase in tax revenues. Still, Iran is expected to run a sizable budget deficit. Shortage of investment resources is the most critical factor. According to recent data, for the last three decades, gross fixed investment has been about 13% of GDP, which is insufficient to maintain the capital stock at its present level, let alone produce robust growth. This is down from over 30% in the 1990s and 25% as late as 2011. Oil exports are the main source of investment resources, but to keep oil and gas production up, the oil and gas sector alone needs investments close to a third of GDP.
You just check the amount of Iran's economic relations with the member countries of Shanghai or Eurasia, and the amount of exchanges may not be a big figure, but in terms of percentage, we see a significant increase. The amount of our exports to Armenia, Azerbaijan, and most of the neighboring countries, Oman, Qatar, and Pakistan, and the like, has grown significantly, which means that the priority of the 13th administration has shifted to the so-called non-aligned countries.
Nevertheless, the energy market is swinging in Iran's favor. Recent oil prices are at their highest level in more than 7 years, thanks to tight supplies and concerns over escalating tensions between Russia and the West over Ukraine.
It was almost 2 weeks ago that OPEC Plus approved the reduction of 2 million barrels of oil. In this situation, Europe is in dire need of energy, be it oil or gas. This clearly shows that the bloc that owns the oil has no fear of America. Also, the arguments that used to be related to the fear of buying oil from Iran do not exist now. Because the countries of the world definitely need to buy Iranian oil. And Europe definitely needs the oil and gas that exists in Iran. Also, in relation to our nuclear agreement, our expectations are beyond oil and gas. And we believe it should have an impact on people's daily lives.
On the other hand, critics of Mr. Raisi's governments believe that warmer relations with China and Russia cannot, however, fully offset the impact of U.S. sanctions. According to some analysts in the energy sector, for now Iran can only depend on China for limited oil sales and on Russia mainly for potential development and investments in energy projects, although sanctions are likely to curb that potential. Moreover, trade with regional neighbors can continue to contribute to Iran's economic growth, but there are limits. For example, at times, trade can entail barter agreements that are limiting for Iranian firms. The critics emphasize that Iran needs the nuclear negotiations in the Austrian capital to be successful if it wishes to unlock its economic growth potential.
A significant issue in the government's actions is the issue of increasing exports. Mr. Raisi's government followed through with economic diplomacy with its neighbors. His trip to Russia, his trip to Iraq and to Oman, Qatar, Central Asian countries such as Turkmenistan and recently Uzbekistan, and reciprocally, the trip of presidents such as the Prime Minister of Iraq, the President of Russia, Turkey and so on, these trips were very extensive for the period of 1 year. And as a result, it has increased our economic relations with our neighbors and increased our exports. Last year, compared to the previous year, our exports to our neighbors increased by 40% and the income from exports also increased. One of the results of the economic diplomacy was that our oil exports went from 200 or 300,000 barrels a day to 1 million, and this effectively reduced the problems that the country was struggling with.
However, the principalists now in power were sharply critical of the 2015 nuclear deal negotiated by Rouhani because they believe that Iran approached the negotiations from a position of weakness before its economy had enough time to adjust to sanctions. In contrast, the Raisi team has tried to take its time in reaching a deal, in part to dispel the notion put out by Western media that it would negotiate when it is desperate enough.
The JCPOA negotiations did not stop in the 13th administration. Negotiations are being carried out, although no results have been achieved yet. But the negotiations did take place on the part of the Iranians. We said we'll negotiate, but the JCPOA negotiation was moved out of Iran's priority. This was an important point, that is, while negotiations were taking place, the connections with the neighboring countries were strengthened. You can see this in the figures and statistics.
Raisi's promise not to tie the fortunes of the people to the nuclear deal is emphasizing that Iran can survive if not do well under sanctions, and that it does not need to back down from its strategic aim of challenging U.S. hegemony in the region to have sanctions lifted.
That's all for today. Thanks from the whole team. Do tune in again at the same time next week and each week after. And don't forget to leave your comments and topic requests. Bye for now.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
As-salamu alaykum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
Hame ba wujood qudde saratani Israel mukhalifin.
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel.
Wajh mushtarak hame wahdat ummat islami.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Faith based on understanding. Saturday, the 4th of Ramadan, 1394, 21st of September, 1974. Similar to the belief of those who blindly follow is the belief of those who follow tribally, ta'assub. Some of these people are ready, may Allah protect us, to insult other prophets to please our prophet. They think that these prophets are fighting one another in the heavens. They say things like, Moses, who on earth was Moses? Our prophet is the best. Sadly, this is not something you find only amongst the uneducated. Sometimes you will see people speaking like this whom you expect better from. People who should know better. People who should understand. And you see them making these sort of mistakes. You hear them saying these sort of things. This is what we call tribalism. Ta'assub. Because Islam says this, this is right, and whatever any other religion says is nonsense. Because we Muslims do this, this is right, and because other people do that, that is wrong. I suppose this is a kind of faith, but it is not one that rests on evidence, but on tribal identity. And you know that tribalism means taking a side without any basis, taking sides based on your feelings rather than based on reason. This is what we call tribalism.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
So these are blind faith and tribal faith. But my friends, I must tell you that the kind of faith Islam values is not either of these. Blind faith and tribal belief have no value. You want proof of this? I will show you that when you believe blindly or tribally, you can lose such faith just as easily as you acquired it. Just as a child, without any effort, or a student, without any difficulty, can acquire simple faith from their parents or teachers, those who steal faith can just as easily come along and take it. And all of a sudden, you see a generation growing up without any faith. A generation whose belief has been pillaged, gone. Everyone's faith is left hollowed out and empty. In the fires of materialism, faith melts into the earth like snow in the summer heat. Who am I talking about? Normally, we talk about the younger generation like this. But I want you to know that when I talk about the generation that is losing its faith, I am not talking about the younger generation, because what we are witnessing today is the blossoming of faith in the younger generation, as it is the younger generation who are looking for a faith that is not based on blind following or tribal identity, but rather is based on understanding. No, I am talking about the generation before the youth of today, the older generation of our society, these who believe in some things blindly.
You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done.
I can't breathe. Help me. Please.
We the people.
Joe Biden halts the construction of the infamous Trump border wall when he takes office, but now the construction of the wall is being resumed. U.S. Customs and Border Protection confirmed that work on the border wall that began under Donald Trump is revving up now back under Biden. So was the halt of the wall construction just a political stunt by the Biden administration? Now, back when Biden took office, he called construction a waste of taxpayers' money. So is it no longer a waste? The administration is also angering immigration advocates by staying silent on reversing Donald Trump's Remain in Mexico policy.
No crossing.
Hello and welcome to We the People. I'm your host, Daniel Arya. In this episode, we'll discuss some of Joe Biden's policies on immigration, the infamous border wall construction restart. Now, apprehending more than 2 million migrants at U.S. borders and the empty promises of the administration on the issues of immigration. Now, as usual, we're pleased to have our two guests on our show, Jamal L. Thomas, who's a co-host of Fault Lines on Radio Sputnik, and Yamir Shabur, media analyst and journalist with the Troika Collective, joining us out of New York. Stay tuned.
For the first time, the number of people arrested at the United States borders in 1 year has surpassed 2 million people. The Biden administration is trying to detach itself from immigration issues ahead of the midterm elections. Two Republican governors paid for the transfer of several released migrants to move to Massachusetts and Washington, D.C., and there were talks of sending some of the migrants to Biden's home in Delaware. With these moves, Republicans are trying to send immigrants to Democratic areas so that the Democratic-run states would deal with immigration problems like southern border states do. The current administration has sent more than 1,300 law enforcement agents to Mexico, Guatemala, and Honduras to try and stop immigrant smuggling.
At the southern border, a record number of crossings, apprehensions topping 2 million for the first time ever. That's a 175% increase from last August. Across the country, cities are overwhelmed by the influx. El Paso opening up an emergency processing facility. The mayor of New York considering cruise ships as temporary housing.
Now, the U.S. Customs and Border Protection Agency has confirmed that the Biden administration is restarting the halted border wall construction that had begun under Donald Trump's tenure. Now, contractors will resume their operations at the Sonoran Desert in Arizona. Biden had said shortly after taking office that building a massive wall is a waste of money and that no American taxpayer dollars will be diverted to such project. So why is Biden restarting the border wall project?
The problem that Joe Biden is having is the issue of politics versus reality. The politics of it is that Donald Trump and anything Donald Trump associated with himself with, Joe Biden hate it. Very straightforward. Not just Joe Biden, the entirety of the party hate it, whether it was good or bad, whether it was even necessary. They hate it. For Donald Trump to have wed himself closer to the issue of build the wall, even being so willing to shut down the government in order to, quote unquote, build that wall. Well, if you get Joe Biden who comes in office, Joe Biden is stuck with the dilemma. I attacked Donald Trump for his border policies, and yet, on some level, I'm stuck with the same dilemma and the problems that Donald Trump had with the border. So whereas Donald Trump was more of a hardliner on the issue of the border, the Democrats, by a political definition, separated themselves from Trump on the issue of the border, which means that you can't be hawkish or hard on the border if indeed you were criticizing Donald Trump when you were out of office.
The new plans for construction will also block access to the public at Friendship Park at the San Diego border fence. According to the CBP, the fence will be replaced with 30-foot walls. Friendship Park has been the only place at the southern border where relatives from Mexico and the U.S. could see, talk, and touch each other through the fences.
This latest announcement really amounts to the complete desecration of this historic location.
John Fanisil is a longtime advocate for Friendship Park. He says replacing the existing fence with two 30-foot-tall walls would destroy any sense of binational unity in this space. Friendship Park is located in the coastal borderlands near Imperial Beach and has become hallowed ground for families separated by the border. Loved ones have used this park as a gathering space where they can see and even talk to each other. But plans for the new wall do not include gates or any space for families to see each other.
Now, it's been reported before that the Trump administration's border wall had been breached more than 3,000 times, and mostly by smugglers. Once smugglers reach parts of the wall where posts are placed in concrete, they saw through the bottom of the posts and leave it dangling, making room for people to squeeze through. Now, sometimes the smugglers disguise the breach so they can go through the same place again and again. What changed Biden's mind on halting the border wall project?
Joe Biden and the Democratic Party have the same type of alignment as the Republican Party. They need to defend this settler colonial state, as we know, called the United States. And in order to do that, they need to keep investing in that border. Other than that, we cannot ever forget about how Joe Biden was the vice president to Barack Obama, and the Barack Obama administration had the most deportation in history of any U.S. president. So we need to always keep these things in mind. And also, given what's going on as we speak with this immigration crisis of just all these migrants flocking from South America, Central America, Mexico, and Haiti, and right now they're at the Mexican border.
According to CBP maintenance records, most of the fence cutting has been carried out in California. In March 2021, smugglers cut through an entire section of fencing and made room for two SUVs full of migrants to drive through. One of the vehicles was involved in an accident with a truck near Hallsville, California. 13 people were killed in the incident.
Too many people basically come to the border with Joe Biden supposedly being a dove on the border. Well, you create a political issue. What do you do with that many migrants coming to the border? And can you take this softy approach when you have so many people? So Joe Biden started to rebuild the wall. There might have been various areas of that wall or that border fence that were necessary, that was not politically necessary, that was legitimately necessary. In which case, Joe Biden finds himself tail between legs, rebuilding the wall. Or for that matter, on the issue of Title 42. Title 42 was the Trump era, let's say, policy that basically was able to stop people who were coming to seek asylum into the United States. And so think about it. You have somebody who comes to the U.S., he says, I want asylum. Well, Title 42 allowed them to say, well, we're concerned about COVID, and because we're concerned about COVID, we're denying you the ability to push for asylum. Now, this is ridiculous on a few counts. During the COVID period, the immigration went down, not up. And also to the point that the United States had, what, over a million people that died from COVID? We were literally the epicenter around the globe, so it's a bit laughable that you're basically saying, well, we have to be concerned about COVID, and so we have to send you away from the country that's the epicenter.
Immigration has been an issue of conflict among American parties and their supporters. On the one hand, Biden makes promises to attract the left and progressive voters, and on the other, carries out the same Trump policies in border states. Polls show that Americans are not happy with Biden's handling of immigration.
Which the Trump administration pushed the Mexican government to do. This shows how Biden is trying to figure out a way to control this flow of migrants that are coming in. More than anything else, these immigrants coming from Venezuela, from the Bolivarian Republic of Venezuela. You've had a wave of Venezuelan migrants, and now he's made a... He's passed a policy where he's only allowing over 24 million Venezuelan migrants to come into the United States, but they need to show that that they have somebody here in the United States that could economically support them. It's not like before under Donald Trump, where Donald Trump allowed Venezuelan migrants to come to the border of Mexico and ask for asylum as a means to weaponize immigration against the Nicolas Maduro government in Venezuela.
And now time for some interesting stats. An NBC News poll found the issue of immigration, voters prefer Republicans over Democrats to run the policy. 46% of respondents believe that Republicans should run immigration policy versus 29% who believe that Democrats should be running it. Also, a CNN poll found that immigration is the third most pressing issue among Arizona voters.
What is going on at the border? Is that the U.S. has a history of mingling in the affairs of foreign nations, especially the South, which based on the Monroe Document, all of those countries in the South were part of U.S. interests. So if we needed to knock over those governments, which we did on a large part, whether you're talking about Chile, Bolivia, Honduras, etc., then we did that. We didn't think twice about it. If that meant taking those countries into all sorts of chaos and havoc, we did that. We didn't think twice about it. Because the way that we would talk about it from the American public is, oh, those countries can't get their affairs in order, when the reality of it is, was those countries had certain materials and things that we needed. We didn't want those countries moving further to the left, and we were willing to intervene in those countries if it would prevent those countries from moving to the left. That created all sorts of destabilization in those countries and all sorts of chaos in those countries. Fast forward to today, where you have all of those countries like what, Cuba, Venezuela, Nicaragua, not to mention people from other countries trying to get into the country. Well, if you look at the history of those countries, many of the history of those countries had entanglements with the U.S. More to the point on that, when Joe Biden got in office, Joe Biden basically said he'd take kids. He was going to be a softie. Well, you had a large number of people who were bringing their kids to the border and leaving their kids at the border. So the Biden administration all of a sudden had to do something to influx of kids at the border. Also, at the point where COVID started to die down, yet people were also coming back to the U.S. with the idea of prospect for job markets and everything else. Meaning, you get this thing that COVID dies and all of a sudden people start looking for jobs and everything else.
On the first days after taking office, Biden stopped the border wall construction, ended the so-called Muslim ban where restrictions were placed on migrants from 13 countries, protected some illegal immigrants like Dreamers, and began ending the Remain in Mexico policy, where asylum seekers would not be able to enter or remain in the U.S. while their applications were processed.
Between Trump and Biden, Joe Biden came across as a softie, whereas the thought is that Donald Trump was the mean guy. Joe Biden, especially being in repudiation of everything that is Donald Trump, including on the issue of immigration, came across with the perspective of a softie. The U.S. doesn't necessarily have the tools or materials to deal with the influx of immigrants or migrants to the degree that it's having. So Joe Biden has run into all sorts of trouble. And Joe Biden has started to use the Trump tools, despite of him attacking Trump for using those tools, to basically try to deal with a problem that he doesn't quite have an answer to. The issue of immigration at the border is severe.
Now, close to 2 years in his term, Biden is reversing some of his immigration policies. The Supreme Court ruled late June that the government is not required to return asylum applicants to Mexico until their cases are decided. However, the administration, after being granted the authority to end the Remain in Mexico policy, has become silent, and it seems that they do not want to take action, at least not until the midterm elections.
It's very important to note that it's not just Venezuelan migrants that are coming to the Mexican border. It is also Colombians, Ecuadorians, Peruvians, Chileans, Hondurans, and massive Haitians, a lot of Haitians. I mean, as we see right now what's going on in the Republic of Haiti, of how they're having a political crisis, a political turmoil, where the United States now is militarily intervening to try to control the uprising that has happened against the prime minister, the president, Ariel, the president of Haiti, which is a U.S., which he's a U.S. Canadian backed puppet. So this shows how a lot of these immigrants that are coming are due to U.S. foreign policy within the region, whether it's in Haiti, where there's a U.S. backed puppet, or in neoliberalist countries like Colombia or Ecuador or Venezuela, where the people over there are immigrating due to a U.S.-backed economic war and sanctions, these illegal unilateral coercive measures, which has affected the Venezuelan economy and the livelihood of Venezuelans, forcing them to migrate up to the north. So we have to understand that most of the people who are coming over here is due to U.S. foreign policy.
Now, on the acceptance of refugees, the administration is just using 20% of spots allocated for them. Now, in fiscal year 2022, from 125,000 available spots, only 25,000 refugees were resettled in the country. Now, this year, however, the refugee admission is more than double the number in 2021, which was a record low of just 11,411 refugees.
I don't think Joe Biden has a straightforward policy on immigration at this point. Like I said, he's started to take up the rules or the tools that Donald Trump has started to use in order to get rid of when Trump was in office to use for himself. We'll see how this progresses. But at this point, there doesn't seem to be a legitimate or, let's say, a concrete policy on the issue of immigration. Democrats don't have anything for it. Republicans certainly don't have anything for it. Both parties tend to use it for political posturing as opposed to doing anything real on the issue. That policy hasn't changed, with Biden included.
Now, Joe Biden signed an executive order last year to expand the U.S. refugee program, which was reduced significantly during the Trump administration. In fact, in 2020, Donald Trump had reduced the refugee cap down to only 15,000. Now, even though Joe Biden reversed Donald Trump's refugee policy, in practice, the number of refugees allowed in the country after that reversal is not significantly higher than the cap put in place by the Trump administration.
We're committed to fixing the immigration system. Instead of working with us on solutions, Republicans are playing politics with human beings, using them as props. What they're doing is simply wrong. It's un-American. It's reckless. And we have a process in place to manage migrants at the border. We're working to make sure it's safe and orderly and humane. Republican officials should not interfere with that process by waging these political stunts.
Also recently, Joe Biden pardoned Americans with prior federal convictions of simple marijuana possession. This order only includes U.S. citizens and green card holders. After the pardon, he announced that no one should be in jail just for using or possessing marijuana. But then, he did not include non-citizens and illegal migrants that could still be deported because of simple marijuana possession.
With Biden's policy now on marijuana, it's just very interesting about how he's now pardoning citizens who have been criminalized due to like the strong drug laws here in the United States. But yet he won't extend that gratitude to the immigrants coming over here, the non-citizens. But yet he would extend that to quote-unquote U.S. citizens.
The National Immigrant Justice Center criticized Biden's ignoring of immigrants and tweeted after the pardon that today's POTUS order grants pardons for marijuana possession convictions, but goes out of its way to exclude undocumented immigrants who may still be detained and deported because of simple possession of marijuana thanks to harsh 1996 immigration laws.
Joe Biden, the president, just continuing the mass incarceration system, which plagues the United States justice system and fuels racism and capitalism here. So this just reflects the hypocrisy of the United States. I mean, it's just like what Malcolm X once said, you know, in the United States there's not no democracy. It's just full of hypocrisy.
Now, the U.S. government has been putting extreme pressure on the Russian government for arresting and sentencing American basketball player Brittany Griner, who entered Russia with possession of marijuana in a pen, while the president will not pardon foreign immigrants who have been charged with the same exact offense. So is this move by the U.S. government not another example of blatant hypocrisy?
Not only, it's not just that part that's hypocritical. All of it is hypocritical. The United States cried completely, oh my God, Brittany Griner is going to be locked up. This is purely political from the Russians. Here's the rub. If I was at a U.S. airport, let's say I was in Texas, and they catch marijuana on me, they're putting me in a cage. They're putting me in jail, just like they put Brittany Griner in jail. And they would prosecute me to the fullest extent of the law for having marijuana on me, just like Russia did Griner. If you want to say there's an element of politics to it, fair enough. They may very well be. But the reality of it is that in any airport in the U.S., you'd have also been arrested. Now, whether you would have been prosecuted to 9 years, okay, that may be secondary to the point. I'm just saying you'd have been arrested and prosecuted by the laws of the land every bit as much as they were in Russia. Now, there's that. There's also the secondary thing where he's like, oh, let her out. I can't believe you guys are locking her up for this. We still have people all across the United States that are in cages right now as a direct result of marijuana policy. It's not just hypocritical from the standpoint of, well, this is also U.S. law, where we will put people in cages for that. But it's also hypocritical in the sense that we have people lounging in jail right now as a result of marijuana laws and marijuana policy. The issue that Biden came up with, saying that they were going to release, what, I think it was 6,000 people. There are 300 million people in the United States, 320 million people in the U.S. What Biden came up with only applies to D.C., and you're only getting, what, 6,000 out. And it's not even 6,000 who are in jail now. Some of those people were already out of jail. He's just expunging the records. He basically had to go out and ask for his governors to do the same in their states. The reality of it is the president of the United States ran on a policy that he was going to expunge the records for people marijuana, and he was going to change the status of marijuana so that people weren't being thrown in a cage for smoking a plant.
According to the Migration Policy Institute, there are 11 million undocumented immigrants in America. From this number, 800,000 are undocumented Latinos and 600,000 are black migrants. Patrice Lawrence, executive director of UndocuBlack, a black immigration group, says the Biden-Harris administration, like previous administrations, have treated undocumented people with little to no regard for their dignity.
DACA, just so everybody's on the same page, is Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals. Now, this was the Obama-era rule put in that basically kids that were born here through no fault of their own could stay here. It was this kind of executive order. But keep in mind, executive orders aren't law in the sense of a traditional law. And the next president that comes into office can basically get rid of the executive order. Usually, Donald Trump, however, was incompetent. And Donald Trump didn't put in the legal requirements in order to get rid of the law. This goes to court. And the court basically comes back and says, okay, DACA is illegal. However, we're not going to do anything to recipients who are already here. 3/4 of the American public at this point backs the DACA program and don't want to get kids out of the country that weren't born here through no fault of their own.
Now, whether it's Democrats or Republicans in power, the country that's taken land from the indigenous population and from its neighboring Mexico by force treats migrants coming from the South like animals. Now, Donald Trump caged and detached migrant children from their parents, and under Joe Biden, law enforcement riding on horseback attacked asylum seekers trying to cross the border. Now, the issue is not just about the party in power, but the elite white man that views people from different races as inferior. Well, that was our show, everyone. I'm your host, Daniel Arya. Do join us again next time for another episode of We the People. Bye-bye for now.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Path towards enlightenment.
In the name of God, the All-Compassionate, the All-Merciful, Salam and welcome to another episode of our weekly series titled Path Towards Enlightenment, which is an endeavor to make you and us familiar with an easy and fluent explanation of God's final scripture to all mankind, the Noble Quran, that was revealed to the last and greatest of all messengers, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. In our last episode of this series, we completed the explanation of Surah Mujadilah. And from this Friday onwards, we embark on explanation of the next surah, that is Surah Hashr, which is number 59 in the serial order of compilation of the Noble Quran. It has 24 ayahs and was revealed in Medina. Its name is derived from the second ayah, which mentions the word Hashr, which does not, however, denote the gathering on the day of resurrection, but it connotes people's gathering for migration. The surah opens and closes with the glorification of God Almighty by all that is in the world of existence. It mainly refers to the collaboration of the Arab hypocrites with the Israelite tribes in Medina against the Muslims, and the banishment of the Jewish tribe of Banu Nadir for its breaking of the agreement with the Prophet. The Almighty Creator says that the joint stratagems of the hypocrites and the rebellious Israelites lead to nothing but their humiliation and defeat. As for the merits of reciting this surah, there are many, including forgiveness of sins and faults. We now invite you to listen to ayahs 1 and 2.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. سبح لله ما في السماوات وما في الأرض وهو العزيز الحكيم هو الذي أخرج الذين كفروا من أهل الكتاب من ديارهم لأول الحشر ما ظننتم أن يخرجوا وظنوا أنهم مانعتهم حصونهم من الله فأتاهم الله من حيث لم يحتسبوا وقذف في قلوبهم الرعب يخربون بيوتهم بأيديهم وأيدي المؤمنين فاعتبروا يا أولي الأبصار.
In the name of God, the All-Compassionate, the All-Merciful, whatever there is in the heavens and whatever there is in the earth glorifies Allah, and He is the Almighty, the All-Wise. It is He who expelled the faithless belonging to the people of the book from their homes at the outset of their en masse banishment. You, the Muslims, did not think that they would go out easily in view of their power. And they, the Israelites, thought their fortresses would protect them from Allah. But the wrath of Allah came at them from whence they did not reckon, and He cast terror into their hearts, so that they demolished their houses with their hands and the hands of the faithful. Thus take lesson, O you who have insight. The opening ayah says that whatever exists in the heavens and on the earth glorify the all-wise and almighty creator of the universe, including angels, mankind, plants, and even inanimate things of which we are not aware. Since the wondrous system of the creation of each and every particle reflects divine omniscience, omnipotence, glory, and wisdom. Ayah 2 refers to the three Israelite tribes of Banu Nadir, Banu Qurayza, and Banu Qaynuqa, which centuries earlier had migrated to Arabia in anticipation of the advent of the last and greatest prophet, as had been foretold in their scriptures. When Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, declared his universal mission of Islam by the command of God, and later, following his persecution by the pagan Arabs of Mecca, migrated to the city of Yathrib, which now became famous as Madinatun Nabi, or the city of the Prophet, and simply Medina, these Jewish tribes denied his mission. They, however, made a pact of peaceful coexistence with the Prophet, but soon breached it by collaborating with the Arab hypocrites, and thought that their strong fortresses would protect them from the Muslims. On God's commandment, the Prophet ordered their expulsion from Medina. These Israelite tribes, who at first thought they would safe in their strongly fortified mansions, suddenly felt fear in their hearts and decided to leave by taking away whatever movable property they had, but demolished their homes with their own hands, lest the Muslims take possession of their vacated property. Here, the Arabic word hashr connotes gathering and driving out of their dwellings. These ayahs teach us that, number one, God Almighty created the entire universe, and thus each and everything glorified Him in its own peculiar manner. Number two, God always assists those who sincerely beseech Him against the plots of the enemies. Number three, those who violate agreements and breach pacts should be decisively confronted so that they do not think of deceiving Muslims again. And number four, we should not be awed by the strength of the enemies, whether hypocrites or disbelievers, and should act with full trust in God. Now let us listen to ayahs 3 and 4 of the same surah.
ولولا أن كتب الله عليهم الجلاء لعذبهم في الدنيا ولهم في الآخرة عذاب النار ذلك بأنهم شاقوا الله ورسوله ومن يشاق الله فإن الله شديد العقاب.
And if Allah had not ordained punishment for them, He would have surely punished them in this world. And in the hereafter, there is for them the punishment of the fire. That is because they defied Allah and His Prophet. And whoever defies Allah, indeed Allah is severe in retribution. The peaceful departure from Medina of the treacherous Israelite tribes was actually a torment for them for destroying while leaving the magnificent homes they had built. And had they refused expulsion, God would have punished them with a severe affliction. Although there is a greater punishment for such treasonous, unrepentant communities in the hereafter. As Ayah 4 means to say, such is the dire fate in this world and the hereafter of those who disobey God, defy the Prophet, turn away from the truth and justice, and immerse themselves in self-conceit and vanity. From these ayahs we learn that, number one, banishment is the minimum punishment that Islam has ordained for conspirers and seditionists. And number two, expulsion from Medina for these three Israelite tribes was because of their breaching of pacts and their plotting against Muslims, and not for their being non-Muslims. In conclusion of this week's episode of Path Towards Enlightenment, here is Ayah 5 of Surah Hashr.
ما قطعتم من لينة أو تركتموها قائمة على أصولها فبإذن الله وليخزي الفاسقين.
Whatever palm trees you cut down or left standing on their roots, it was by Allah's will, and in order that He may disgrace the transgressors. This ayah refers to the divine commandment to the Prophet to cut down some of the palm trees that were adjacent to the strongholds of the banished Israelite tribes so that these would not be misused for hiding and carrying attacks on Muslims, although Islam forbids the felling of trees, setting ablaze of farms, and killing of animals, even during military confrontation.
This was a further form of disgrace and humiliation.